Hi, I'm Danny.
And I'm Gabby.
And this is Clashes, a podcast exploring culture shock in all its chaotic forms.
We know a good shock can shake things up.
So we blew up our lives and crash-landed in Paris.
With a delusional sense of hope.
And a dangerous bread habit.
I feel attacked. But culture shock isn't just about changing countries.
Almost. It's about embracing the unknown.
From navigating friendships in your 30s.
Awkward. To processing pop culture's oddest obsessions.
So buckle up and embrace the chaos.
One clash at a time.
Hello.
Welcome back.
Welcome back, everyone.
Episode 7.
How did you guys like our little mini app?
I got good feedback from some people. They texted me. They're like, that was so funny. I was laughing or whatever.
And really?
Yeah.
Okay. That's good. We tried to keep it short. What's up? What's up with you?
I want to hear what's up with you.
What happened? Everyone knows I was supposed to go to London.
I'm sorry to laugh. It's just the reason is crazy.
So chaotic. So I was supposed to go to London. So basically I was supposed to go to London to reclaim London from my ex who lived in London, lives in London. He's dead. So lived in London. Just kidding. Sorry. That was a dark joke.
We're going to be like, rest in peace.
He's emotionally dead to me. And then literally on the walk there, I just gotten off the line 7. I'm walking to Gare du Nord and I'm walking there with my backpack on. It's like, your train is canceled, which has never happened to me. I was in a 1 year long distance relationship. Never once was my Eurostar canceled. And it's, we find out that it's because a World War II bomb was on the tracks, which I'm like, sorry, it wasn't left. I mean, that thing has been on the track since the Eurostar was invented. So
did it just discover it?
Yeah, I guess they were doing construction, but I thought it was like a hand grenade. It turns out it was like a bomb. 500 kilo,
yeah.
Like, yeah, full size
huge.
Bomb.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I guess I had to defuse it. So then they told us we'd be able to get on the train later. So we rebooked. And then we had Bloody Marys and oh, just kill time. And then they just canceled the entire thing. So
I told Paul Paul saw it. And I was like, oh my God, how crazy is this? And he's like, that happens all the time.
Did you see the comments on the New York Times article? That was everyone's comment. Everyone's comment was like, this happens all the time in Germany. This happens all the time in the north of France.
I'm like,
it's normal.
Is it normal
that all the trains are canceled?
Huh?
Canceling the Eurostar for an entire day is pretty disruptive. That was a weekend of
Fashion
Week too.
Because it was a fresh bomb. Like, it hadn't exploded.
Yeah.
So I think they had to be extra cautious to make sure that it wasn't going to go off.
But it hasn't gone off for the entire 100 years since World War.
Yeah, but can you imagine they let a train go by and the vibration, makes it go off.
Yeah.
But yeah, Paul was very not faced by it, and I was like, that's insane.
Well, Paul wasn't supposed to go to London and had
no.
a hotel and a million restaurants booked, so
no.
But I spent all day canceling.
To me, the funny part is every American I know was
chaos.
Shocked.
I know, because the New York Times published this article, and because make it sound sensational.
Yeah,
and it's World War II bomb on the tracks, and everyone in the comments was like, I can't believe you could think this is interesting. You did just think this is interesting because this is Paris.
I think it's interesting.
And of course I did too. And you know what? As a Leo, I really needed it to be a story. The reason that I lost my entire trip and my deposits
to me
also.
It was just crazy, you're finding World War II bombs. I guess we haven't really had war, modern warfare in the U.S.
Yes, I know.
What are you gonna find, a musket?
Yeah,
so it's not
when's the last time you used the word musket?
I don't know.
I didn't even know that word until I heard it.
It's the Revolutionary War or whatever. What are they gonna find?
My reference, I'd be
cannon?
What are you gonna find, a red coat? That was the only thing I could possibly so they didn't possibly
but here
reference.
It's World War II bomb that never went off, so
anyways, you had a good meal recently.
Friend of the pod, Jess, and her husband.
Different friend, Jess. Guys, I swear to God, we don't just have one friend. There's
Jess
multiple
Fitzgerald,
Jesses. Yeah.
And her husband, Scott, are part of this group that started a restaurant bar called The V. It's really good. Their whole thing is around sustainability and local products, basically. They only use French products.
I didn't know that, actually.
Yeah. So that's why, you won't find tequila there, for example, on the menu, because that's not,
That's right, because you tried to order a...
I asked. What,
Danny
what?
Loves to order a Marg in a non-Marg
spot. What do you have that's closest to mezcal?
You'll be in a dive bar in Wisconsin, do you have a mezcal margarita?
And so, actually, they had some sort of spirit that wasn't the same, but it was, smoky. So, yeah. Anyway, the bar... / restaurant is incredible. Food was really good. Right now they have, basically it's a tasting menu, 5-course meal, and you can
so
pair
jealous.
It with cocktails.
Yum. Their cocktails
really, really
are that's
so
their kind of like
yeah like
OG
their
concept.
I would
yeah.
say their claim to fame at the beginning was cocktails, because it's two of the guys that were at Little Red Door in Paris came to be part of the team. So the cocktails are incredible. The food is really good. Mm-hmm. So if you're in Paris and you want to have a great meal, go to Devie, D-E-V-I-E. For a drink, for a meal, both are great. I recommend if you do both, the menu. Like, it's five cocktails, five dishes.
Are they mini cocktails? Recommend.
Huh?
Were you wasted?
No. They're not minis, but they're also not like, it's not like you're drinking five martinis.
Okay. Cool. Well, today, on a heavier note, we are going to talk about a subject that has been proposed to us multiple times over DM. And it's also something that I just, at this age, I feel like it comes up often. I was talking to a group of girls yesterday and it was like a very hot talk conversation, and it's a subject.
We also posted it on Instagram and got like an immediate response.
Yeah, immediate response, like within like 30 minutes. I think, okay, so not to like bury the lead, it's friendship breakups. And I'm realizing that a lot of people have, myself included, a lot of shame around the subject, because I think it touches on, I think going through a friendship breakup, whether you're the, what would you call it, breakup-y or breakupper, is a kind of a mild trauma and can be kind of like a character assassination sometimes. And I think a lot of people have a hard time discussing it and kind of hide it or bury it under the rug. So I've noticed that when you give people permission and opportunity to discuss it, it's
like, oh, you,
really cathartic.
That happened to you too?
Yeah. I think people really
I'm not a monster.
Exactly. That's exactly it though. Like, oh, I'm not a monster. Like,
yeah,
I had a friend, you know, ghost me or break up with me or like fade out. And I think we've all been there. So
I think it happens more than we realize, but people are embarrassed to talk about it.
Yep. Anyways, it's something that's come up a lot, so we're going to talk about today, and I think dig into, I mean, and to tie it back to obviously like why we're discussing this. I mean, I just think it's one of the biggest like clashes of life, and also it comes up a lot when you move to another country, and that's also something that's been coming up a lot with conversations with friends. I think when you move to another country, you can oftentimes, I was just chatting with a girl who is going through a lot of like friendship turmoil because she moved and her, some of her best friends are taking it kind of difficultly, which is really understandable. I don't know if you ever saw the movie, Am I Okay, with Dakota Johnson. I like love it. It's very much a plane movie, and she, her best friend decides to move back to London where she's from, and her best friend's like engaged and Dakota's like left behind, and she just like is having a hard time being happy for her friend, and they really have a fallout. And I think a lot of people feel, I've noticed a lot of people will feel like left behind or like your life is changing and they're not part of it anymore. So anyway, it's something that definitely comes up when it comes to cultural conversations too.
And I think something that makes it even harder is like there's often no closure when it comes to a friendship breakup. It's like either you stop talking to each other or this person is not in your life anymore. When you go through a romantic breakup, there's ways in which you can get closure, whether by yourself or with this person, sitting down and having a final conversation, or I don't know. I think there's things you can do, and there's even almost like a band-aid you can put on the hurt. Like, you're gonna hook up with a random stranger just to feel alive. I don't know. You can't do that with a friend. Like, you can't just be like, I'm just gonna befriend this girl in the club real quick.
Like, I know, you know? It doesn't like fulfill the same thing. I know, because one conversation we've been having a lot preparing for this topic of like why it sucks so much and why I think there's like a very cliche line that people will say where a friendship breakup is more painful than kind of a romantic one. And I don't know, I have mixed feelings on that as someone who's going through a romantic one. It also fucking sucks as well, but I do think there's certain aspects, and I think you're totally right. I think the lack of closure, the lack of ritual around it, the lack of honoring the end of it and validating it. And
And I think a friendship breakup always stays with you. Even
someone in our DM said, I wish I could remember your name, so sorry, but someone in our DM said every girl's Roman Empire is the best friend she no longer speaks to.
Yes, you think about it forever. Maybe like as time goes by, you're like, forget about this person, but then like something will happen that reminds you of them. And you're like, oh my God, I wonder what happened to that
crazy
girl.
To have been so close with someone and not have that. Yeah. I also was thinking a lot about, as someone who's going through like a strong rejection on the romantic breakup front, of what about that has made me feel rejected. And like, I was broken up with for various reasons, but like largely because I don't want to have kids, and who knows, maybe there's attraction stuff. So that's stuff that like I feel I can cope with, right? But when a friend ends something with me, I really feel like it's more of a character. Like, I feel like they've seen me, and it's not like they have to be attracted to me. It's not like they have to plan a life where they're like my partner. Like they're looking at me and they're being like,
I don't have to make out with you. Right. I have to like you for who you are.
I know. And it's like, so it's like they didn't need that level of like singularity from me, and yet still have chosen that despite having multiple friends and like being able to find like like, I still can't play a role in their life because of who I am.
That's why I think a lot of the rituals around romantic breakups are always like kind of cliche, like attraction. So you go to the gym and you get hot, or you're like, I want to change my life and be a different person. Ooh, you get banged.
So true. Like the remedy is easier because rejection.
And obviously these things are surface. You're not going to fix the actual problem. Yeah. And I think when a friend dumps you, it's a little harder. My question is, have you ever gone through a friendship breakup personally yourself?
Yeah, I've been on both sides of it.
You've been
I've been the breakup or a breakup. Yeah. Dumpy. That's better. So the one that I was the dump E was my fault. And I was going through like a chaos time in New York with my job. And there was this woman who'd been really gracious and helped me. She actually helped me find my job and wonderful. And she'd invited me to her wedding. And I don't know if you guys have ever been through this or have symptoms of ADHD. It's like when you procrastinate something so long to the point that you're like, I'm so overwhelmed by the thought of it. I couldn't get myself to, I had to book a flight to Hawaii. I couldn't get myself to book this flight to Hawaii. I was like, hadn't taken a vacation in years from my job. And then it got to like weeks before the wedding and I hadn't planned it. And I basically had to message her and be like, the flights were like $4,000 at that point. And I was like, I just can't do it. And it was my fault. Like, I think after that, we just weren't friends again. Like, yeah.
Didn't want to be friends with you because you didn't go to her wedding.
Yeah. And like, it wasn't because I didn't go to her wedding. It's because I let her know so last minute. It was very selfish of me. Granted, like in that moment of life, probably a really good friend would have looked at me and been like, you're not doing great.
I was going to say, how close were you?
It was more like acquaintance. Like it was a good friend, like work-wise. I guess a good New York friend, if that makes sense. Like for me in New York, I didn't have like super close friends. I had a lot of acquaintances. So it was like a next level acquaintance. But I still feel bad about it. And I think it's so funny that when you're like, what can you change about yourself after? That was a really big wake up moment for me.
Okay.
Where I realized like
something good came out of it.
Yeah. Where I realized like my lack of organization, my procrastination, my justifying everything as secondary to my job doesn't just hurt me. It's hurting other people around me. And I think I really was a come to Jesus. And I am really intentional about that kind of thing. Like if someone invites me to a wedding, I like will be part of the hotel block like a year in advance. Like I think I learned not everyone needs to like be part of my mental chaos. That's not their problem. Like I need to sort out my mental chaos and show up for other people. And it was a really transformative moment, but obviously like I still feel kind of shitty about the whole thing.
Did she tell you like, I don't want to be friends with you anymore? Or did
I
she just,
think
like,
she said she was pretty disappointed in me. Oh, I kind of like blacked it out because it was so like awkward. I think she said she was pretty disappointed in me. Like I think it was
over email.
Oh. It was a bummer. And I still admit to this day it was my fault, but yeah.
Okay, no, yeah. I see that, but I also feel like destination weddings are always tricky.
Yeah, I think it wouldn't have been a problem for me not to go. I just should have let her know, like, at least 4 months earlier. But then in terms of being, for me, like, when I, like, dump the dumper, I don't really, like, confront people and say, but I definitely have been, like, pulled away totally from someone when I'm just like, this is not serving me anymore, which I also, and we'll talk about this later in terms of solutions, like, have mixed feelings around how I've handled that.
Okay.
But, yeah, what about you?
I have never been broken up with, but I've been ghosted, which is similar.
And you're saying broken up with is like someone sent you like a breakup text, right?
Yeah, like we didn't have any conversations. Right. She just simply stopped talking to us.
Good God.
And us, I mean me and my friend group, but she was really my friend. And she was a really close friend that I met in Miami. We were like very, very close. Then I moved to New York and we were so very close. And then she moved to New York and I introduced her to my friend group there. We were having a great time. She was part of like my immediate circle. And yeah, then she started dating this guy and they were like hanging out all the time, doing staycations in New York. And like, I was like, okay, well, cute. Like, good for you. Got it. And then 2 weeks into this thing with this guy, we're having drinks at a friend's house. And she goes, yeah, we're talking about like looking at rings together. And me and my other friend,
there's always one friend who's the 2 week ring girl.
We were just like, are you okay?
Did you like not? No, you did you say you're are you okay?
So she had told me before.
Okay.
And I was like, I think you need to slow down. Yeah, you just met this guy and you just got out of a 10-year relationship. Her dad had just recently passed away. Oof. And I told her, I just don't think you're emotionally in the best place. I think you're very vulnerable now and I don't think you should commit to someone right now. Mm. Like, you need to sort out.
I feel like a lot of people grieving in that situation are like, don't tell me what to do. Like,
yeah, but I'm like, your dad just died. Yeah. Like, you need to grieve your dad. And like, that's like a lot of emotional, like.
Of course, yeah.
Anyway, So when she told me, I was like, nice about it. And I was like, oh, I'm so happy that you're like in love with this guy and like you found someone that you're so connected to. But I was just like, I just don't think you're emotionally ready.
You give her, what do you call it? Like a compliment sandwich.
Yeah, I did.
So and happy I found someone. Maybe like, also go to therapy and work on your shit.
Yeah, well.
Also, maybe not a ring.
Also, he was still married. He
no.
He was going through a divorce, but he was still married. Okay. And he couldn't divorce his wife because he was giving her a green card or something. Anyway, so I remember. So technically, they couldn't even seen.
Yeah.
They couldn't be seen in public, which is why they were doing all these staycations in hotels. And then she, after that, like would just not like want to hang out. And that's, I was about to move to France, so I was like, I had texted all my friends, hey, I'm moving to France in like 2 months, I'm gonna plan all these things, I hope you can like make it a priority to hang out with me as much as you can, but also I understand if you can't. Mm-hmm. And I will say my friends really like dropped everything to hang out with me those last 2 months. And the last day that I was there, my best friend threw me like a mm-hmm. slumber party, and it was so literally fun. Like five people, and she was one of those people. And all my friends said, because this was 2020, she said, if you come over to sleep over, I just need you to get tested before. Which is like a pretty fair, because it was COVID right. time.
Yeah, of course.
And I also, it was more for me because I was getting on a flight and you needed to be
at like, that time, we negative. Had like 9,000 yeah. papers and tests needed.
Yeah. And she was just like, and she never responded in the group chat. Like everybody was like, yes, I'll be there. Tested negative. Like everybody was sharing like pictures of like their tests or whatever. And then the day comes that morning, I remember, and she just texted the group, sorry, don't have to get tested, have a good flight. And then, like, never heard from her again.
Never heard from her again.
Never, never.
You know what's so interesting, I think what this story reminds me of, is a lot of people don't like to be around people who hold them accountable.
I mean, I mentioned the guy because that's the only thing I can think yeah. that pissed her off, or I don't know. We like, I guess, quote unquote, judged her when she was like, we're looking at rings, and we were like, you're insane, yeah. which I think is actually the good friend reaction to have.
But I think you need to be in a really specific place in life where you can hear your friend's criticism and your friend's honest advice and not take that as like the shortcut out of that is just not being around those people and to be around only people who encourage and frankly, who enable
yeah.
decisions. And I see that a lot.
No.
Yeah. And it also like, I also think this brings up the topic of like, ambiguity and like not having a stark end to something, like the fact that you're sitting here and you're being like, I'm wondering, like I'm not really sure, like it could be for this reason, I don't know, like if we can't bring it up with our friends and ultimately we end up in an ambiguous breakup situation, I keep thinking of this, like or especially when someone disappears like suddenly. I did this newsletter and it was around breakups feeling like, are they evolutionarily natural? And when I did it, I was looking, and I was doing romantic breakups, but I was really looking into like humans and how they process like the loss of a person. And evolutionarily, for the most part, if someone disappeared suddenly and
we're
you
not
never
wired.
Spoke to them again, we're yeah. literally not wired to have someone be alive and no longer be in our life. Like when people would have breakups in like tribes, they would actually like be around the other person while they were with like a new person. You know what I mean? Like they would like switch partners, or if they didn't, the only options would be they were shunned or they were dead. And frankly, when you were shunned, you were as good as dead.
Yeah.
So our brains aren't wired to like see your friend on Instagram and no longer talk to her. That's like not tribally how our brains evolve, which is interesting. But yeah, I mean, I think it brings up subjects of like, you asking yourself the why is kind of brings us to like why these friendships end, you know? And there's so many reasons.
Yeah.
I think a lot of people, so we've like done some research and had some conversations with people and asked on Instagram, and like the one thing that comes up all the time is one-sided friendships. But what I find interesting about the term one-sided friendships is that like everyone has a really different definition of what a friendship is. So for example, I am someone who I really need slightly low investment friendships, which means like I can't show up for someone. I'm not the friend who's going to be like, what do you need right now? I'm going to bring you a bowl of soup.
Right.
It's just, I can't give that much. I don't know. I used to feel guilty about it, and I've just accepted like, it's just my limitations as a person. When I'm with you, I'll give you a ton of attention and time. But then like when I'm gone, I can't be texting you all the yeah. time. I can't be like derailing my day to like bring you something. And I've noticed that people that I fall out with oftentimes are the friends who need.
They're like high maintenance.
They're
friends.
Really high yeah. maintenance friends. And I'm like more of a low maintenance friend. And I think one-sided friendships is really interesting because I had a friend confront me one time and I really appreciated this.
Okay.
And she said, she's actually confronted me multiple times, and she said, you know, like, Gabby, you never reach out to me. And I don't. I'm really bad at that. And I think the friends who I've stayed with over time know that that's not personal. It's just yeah. kind of how I am. Mm-hmm. But I acknowledge that, like, I also truly believe in this line I saw the other day. It's you deserve to receive what you're able to give. And true. I think if someone is a really, really generous, really available person, they also deserve a friend who's like that for them. If I can't be that, it makes sense to me. So yeah. One-sided friendships is so interesting to me because I think it's one-sided as perceived. But, like, have you ever heard the line? Sorry, this is a ramble, but have you ever heard the line, like, sometimes like in romantic relationships, they talk about how a guy will be able to give you, like, on a scale from 1 to 10, he'll be able to give you a 4 and you'll be like, no, I need like an 8. But there's another person out there who can accept a 4. Mm-hmm. Like, not everyone requires the same things from relationships, you know?
It's compatibility too.
Yeah, it's compatibility. It's like, what value does it bring? What are the, like, I don't know. It's interesting to think about, like, what do our friends owe us? Like, do they owe us blind support? Do they owe us critical insight? Do they owe us the truth?
I think it's like a case by case. Hmm. Like, one of my best friends who you've met, Morel,
we just, like, name drop everyone on here. I hope everyone's happy with their name being called.
It's fine. I tell her this all the time. She's like one of my closest friends. I consider her one of my best friends. And she's a horrible texter. Mm. And I know it's not personal. And I know we always, it's a joke. It's like, Morel's going to answer this text in 5 business days. And it's a joke. But I know when push comes to shove, if something actually were to happen, right, she will always be there for me. And she's always been a good friend to me. She's just not a good texter.
And you're able to, like, weigh, okay, she's been a friend for a really long time. When she shows up in person, she's really there. Like, and you're able to weigh these things and say, like, okay, this is a fatal flaw.
Yeah, thing I was going to say, for me, that's not a deal breaker.
Yeah.
But also, but some people
would
history.
Be. Some people would be. Like,
true.
Yeah.
And it's like, Merle and I have a lot of history. So
is it worth, like, getting rid of that for a text? Yeah.
But also, I'm like, that's not going to bother me. Like, if you don't answer me right away, that's not a big deal.
Yeah.
And I know how to get her to answer me right away.
Sorry, like, a celebrity died?
I'm like, oh my God, guess who I ran into? Or, like, I have gossip. And she's like, what is
so
it?
Like, so you do see it.
Actually, my other best friend, Mariana, is the same way. Maddie, like, I know if I need her attention, I have to be like, oh my God,
Britney Spears.
I saw someone from high school today. And she's like, ooh. So I love them and I know them very well enough to know that they're not going to be maybe like the best texters, or like, I just know they're not that way. But to me, that's not
right. Well, like, so this whole, like, tanks, we talked about this on our friendship episode initially.
It's not a fatal flaw for me.
Yeah, it's a fatal flaw. So she has this theory, which, like, I know there's holes in it. She's not a psychiatrist. Like, she's just a girl. She's just a random white girl. And as a random white girl, I can say that. And she has this, like, theory she calls the fatal flaw theory. But I think about it all the time because for me, it's been a really cathartic. I didn't have really close friends in New York. I had a lot of acquaintances. And in this stage of life, I'm realizing that when you stay friends with someone for, like, a long period of time, like, when you have longer friendships, which is crazy to realize in my 30s, but just is the case, it's like, your friends are going to drive you crazy sometimes. You're really good at acknowledging this. Danny's, like, a pro at, like, acknowledging the truth and the realism of friendships. I tended to have this point of view because my friendships were so easy, I felt like, in childhood, that, like, friendships should just be perfect and easy and smooth. And I'm running to this stage of life where I'm, like, looking at my friends and I'm like, oh my God, there's always this one moment where I'm like, why are they like that? And obviously acknowledging that my friends are like that with me, like, oh my God, why is she like that? Why does she have that, like, specific trait? And her theory is just, like, all your friends are going to have a fatal flaw, at least one.
For sure.
And you have to decide, like, is it a flaw that they're always late? Is it that when they're going through a breakup, it's the fucking end of the world? This is me. And it's like, they're the only one to ever have gone through a breakup. Is it that they, like, I don't know, like, they don't get along with your boyfriend or something. They don't get along with men. It's like, what is it? And then you have to look at it and say to yourself, is this something that I can tolerate?
Yeah.
And also, what I think is a really key part of her theory is that if you're going to accept it, you have to accept it. You cannot bitch about it till the end of time, because that is just going to put, like, this toxic energy on your entire friendship.
I think that's true. I mean, I think there's people, and the best way to find out what their fatal flaw is to travel together. That's when you realize, oh, that's really annoying. All our friends have a thing or two that drives us crazy, or that you're like, you're so annoying. And I think new friendships are weird because you're, like, waiting for that to happen.
Well, so now I am. Have you ever heard of hedgehog? This is me. Not me with my theories.
Have you heard of hedgehog theory? You're a scholar.
I'm a scholar of TikTok theory. Hedgehog theory is like, I probably also brought this up in the friend episode, but like humans have such a desire to be close to each other.
Yeah.
But when we get close to each other, we prick each other.
Yeah.
And I always think about that. Like I have such a desire and then I get close with someone. We do so much together. And then one day I'm like, what the actual fuck was that? You know, like
so, name dropping again. This happened to me last time I went to New York. I was with my four best friends, like Morel, mm-hmm. Olga, and Mari. And
I picture you guys as like the gang from Recess, from the cartoon.
Well, it's so funny because we also met at different stages of life. And we went to Vermont together. And I noticed like little fights happening, like nothing major. It's like, oh my God, you went to get breakfast and you didn't tell me? And I think that's fine and it's healthy and you get over it quickly when you have so much history with a person. Because you could be like, what the fuck? Like, next time tell me and I would have gone.
I appreciate that, though. Like, that level of friendship. Right. Yeah. You can actually, like, yeah.
And I think if it was a newer friend, you maybe would have been, like, texting someone. Like, oh my God, can you believe this bitch?
Wait,
like,
but that's actually... Okay, so I don't know if you guys read... there was this, like, the Cut article that was really interesting. And it was called Exactly Why Our Friendship Breakup So Brutal. And I think what they talk about is that oftentimes, especially with women and especially in friendships, we don't confront. Like we are so uncomfortable with confrontation. And they give this example of this girl at a table and she tells her friend that her friend hurt her feelings. And she's like, she watched her friend like viscerally recoil.
Because nobody likes to be
confronted. Because no one likes to be that. And also but the thing is, if like my childhood friend or my sister said to me like, hey, when you did that like sucked, I'd be like, okay, cool, I won't do it again. And it's so, you're right, like the pressure of like a long-term friend saying it to you is so different than a new friend where you're kind of like, well, that's it, you know, like you just kind of call it the end of the day.
I think you also know, I don't know,
that it's not like make or
you
break.
You can read the room kind of. Like I feel like I know who my friends are and I know what I can tell them. Like I know these three girls that I just mentioned,
like, you know, like what's not going to make them recoil.
I just don't think there's anything I can tell them,
really,
honestly, unless it's like something crazy, like leave your husband, you know, like, like I don't think
it'll come, don't worry, I'm just kidding.
No, honestly, like I because we've been friends for so long, we have so much history that I don't think it would have to be something so extreme for me to be like, we can't be friends anymore.
But I feel like I am terrible at the confrontation part, so I just phase people out, but I'm not giving people a chance to like workshop issues with me. And I think in that sense, I realized, like when I was saying at the beginning of the opening of the podcast, that like I phase people out.
I do the same too.
But I like wish I could give them.
Same.
In this article, what I really like is like a lot of friends handle it with humor. And I think like I'd be that kind of person. Like I like when my friends drag me, but I need them to do it in a way that's like a little bit of a laugh. Okay. Like Gabby's never gonna
like you can't like it can't be that serious.
Yeah, like I'm like, if they're gonna make I want them to like tease me, but in a way that feels like we can laugh about it, not like it's like a dramatic confrontation. And
I'm the same way because I myself have ghosted people, and I don't think that's right, but I think it's, I don't know if it's less cruel, but I feel like it maybe is to just like distance yourself from someone than to be like, I don't like your personality, or I don't like your values. I don't like, I don't know, like whatever the reason is.
No, but I mean, so that like.
So it's like a tricky thing because it's like, what's worse? Someone telling you like your personality sucks and I don't like you, or someone just like simply pulling away from you.
I'm not sure. I have this question all the time. It is my biggest question and I've discussed it in therapy, and the best I can come to is, like you said at the beginning, is case by case. Is that like, kind of like you said, there's some people that are worth. To be totally fair, I've never actually confronted someone and said like, hey, I just feel like really uncomfortable with your life decisions. I mean, in terms of reasons that friendships end, I think a lot of the times it's emotional vampire vibes, which came up a lot during our conversation.
Yeah. Oh, I actually dumped someone over that. But
yeah. Well, and then I think the other one oftentimes like is like people who continue to make like kind of like chaotic or bad life decisions, and you're trying to give them, this came up a lot in our conversation yesterday, and you're trying to give them advice and they ignore everything.
That's
you do
a big one for me,
which is interesting because I think what happens is it erodes the trust and respect between the two of you, and in that sense I don't think that puts you in a situation where you're exceptionally encouraged to confront them and have a mature conversation. I think you've already felt like the trust and the emotional bond is eroded so far that like, why am I going to put the energy in, you know?
And it makes you feel like you're not being valued as a friend.
Yeah.
So
why would you value them in a way where you give respect this massive confrontation?
Try to confront you about it. But I also think people don't confront people because it's uncomfortable. It's awkward.
Agreed. Yeah.
And you don't know how people are going to take it. And
I always think it's going to make it worse. And to be fair, I'm not giving people enough credit, maybe.
But that's the thing, because it's like, I think it's a two-way street. It's the way you bring it up. So if you're very gentle about it, maybe it doesn't come through as a direct confrontation. Mm-hmm. Like if you're like a compliment sandwich, you're a great girl, but yeah, you know,
I know.
But if you're too direct, then it might feel as an attack. And so the other person might be like, well, fuck you. And then friendship over anyway. Yeah. So I think it's like difficult to confront it.
Have you ever done it successfully?
Yes. I've done it with a friend who, when I was going through a breakup, I just didn't feel she was, quote unquote, there for me. And I told her and I was like straight up. I was like, hey, I thought you could have been more present while I was going through this hard time. And I said it in like a very like vulnerable way, and I think that's why it was received well.
You used I statements,
huh?
You used I statements.
That's no, I was just therapy. Like, I was really, I was going through it. I felt like shit, yeah. And like I really could have used like hanging out with you a little more this summer.
You need your friends during a
breakup. And she was like, "You're right. I should have done more." Yeah. And then after that, she was like checking in and try to like make plans with me. And like,
I'm so impressed that you were able to bring it up and like help.
Well, we also have been friends for many years. And I think the reason I confronted it was because before that incident, which honestly wasn't even that bad, but I just like was hurt by it. Mm-hmm. She was a great friend to me. So I was like, this is actually unlike you.
Yeah.
So, and it hurt my feelings, by the way. So again, could have been a miscommunication that could have led to a friendship breakup, but I decided this friendship is valuable to me. You decided to
give her a chance and to bring it up. And I think that's like, when I think about confrontation, I know we've talked about this, but I always come back to this actual like romantic relationship advice they tell you, where they say, women will often say like, it's not nagging, that's me trying to make this relationship work. And the second that I stop quote unquote nagging you, which by the way is incredibly sexist term, it's over.
Yeah.
And I think that's true. And I also think for friendships, like if you decide to just abandon it, then it's kind of over. We have an interesting voice note from a friend that I think is like very worth playing now, because I think it exemplifies some of these topics. And I don't know, it made me feel less alone, especially because I've been through situations like this. It talks a lot about one-sided relationships, what that means to different people, when you bring up confrontation, how you handle being confronted.
And also, like, I think the history of the friendship is very important, because, like I said, there's some newer friends that I meet that I'm like, I don't want to confront this because I just met you and honestly, I don't have time for this. But my core group of friends, when and if this happens, I'm like, we're going to fucking talk about this and we're going to like resolve it, because this means too much to me. Mm-hmm. So I think there's so many layers that go into a friendship breakup and confronting someone, or like who's worth a confrontation and how to do it. But let's play our friend's voice out.
Hello. Okay. I'm going to try to say this as concisely as I can. I had a very close friend that I had made in Paris. We actually knew each other or met once when we lived in Spain years ago, and we were reintroduced by our mutual friend when we both moved here. And we went through a lot together. Like, there were some ways in which we were very different, but we had so much fun together, and I think we were both like really good friends to each other. And at one point in our friendship, I suddenly had kind of like a lot of things going on at the same time. I had a new romantic relationship. I had two new big job opportunities. And then, of course, I'm taking care of my kid every other week. And I just was, just as from a time perspective, not as available. And I was just kind of, I don't know, not able to do these like midday lunches and things that we had done for a long time together. And at a certain point, she was like, I feel like you're not putting in the effort anymore. It has to go both ways. I think I'm going to like step back from us, something along these lines, in like a WhatsApp text message. And I immediately was like, I'm so sorry. I have this like sort of like new relationship. I've got this new job that I'm doing, this new project I'm taking on. It's like a lot right now. And then like my daughter, like she's having some things at school, and you know, there's just a lot of different responsibilities, but I'm really sorry. I'm always here for you. And, you know, just know that I care about you and I care about our friendship, and you've always been a good friend to me. And then I just didn't really hear from her for about 2 months. And this sounds very petty, but I realized that she stopped following me on Instagram. And during those 2 months, I just kind of like, I don't know why, I just like realized. And I thought that was just like a weird, I don't know, sort of like a, in this day and age, it felt kind of like a, like she was breaking up with me. Anyway, so about after a couple of months, she did reach out, and I was a bit hurt at that point and said, like, hey, I noticed you like stopped following me, and I tried to like reach out to you a couple times and I haven't heard anything. And I don't know, some people say that I should have just accepted her olive branch of her coming back and trying to get back in touch with me, but I was a bit hurt at that point. And then she kind of lashed out at me and was like, well, I don't follow narcissistic Instagram accounts, and I felt very insulted. And then I was a little bit catty back and kind of like, you've lost the plot. And then, yeah, she blocked me. So it was sad. And I don't know, I don't know if it's just two people growing in different directions, and that's just part of nature and part of life. Or yeah, I mean, of course, I think about if I could have handled anything differently, and or whether maybe do we just weren't so incompatible as friends in the end. But it's these kind of questions that makes you, I don't, when it ends, you feel almost like a broken romantic relationship. And really, for me, at least, I'm like very reflective on like what went wrong. Was it never good to begin with? Were there signs that did I ignore like certain red flags? And of course there were, but then I don't know, with friends, you kind of, sometimes I like friends that are a little bit cuckoo, and I don't know. And that's it. Let me know if you have questions. Bye.
Yeah. Oh my gosh. That's a intense one. I feel like so many emotions listening to that, because I think, I don't know, I'm coming back to this idea over and over again that I feel so much shame. You could probably hear in my voice, like I'm really embarrassed about the time like a friend broke up with me.
I think it's normal.
But like hearing other people talk about it makes me realize this is so common. But yeah, it's an interesting topic because it brings up like, is someone ready to have that confrontation with you? Or are they just not in the stage of life where they can give that energy, have that vulnerability, which is key.
I think in their case, they just weren't ready to like make up at the same time. Like one of them was like, I'm so sorry. And then the other one disappeared. And then the other one was like, okay, now I'm ready. And then the other was like, well, no, now I'm mad at you because you unfollowed me. And so it's just like timing was off too.
Yeah. Yeah. Have you ever had a friendship breakup that you learn something about yourself after?
Yes. I actually did dump someone. I forgot to say at the beginning of the episode. She just wasn't like a super close friend. There was this girl I went to college with. She was kind of cuckoo, like toxic from day one. But
not good cuckoo.
No. She was like crazy. And I always saw this side of her. She was like just not very, she had a really difficult relationship with men. Where she would
feel that girl.
No, but like she was toxic. Like she would become obsessed with men.
Feel and then, that girl. I'm just kidding.
No, like the shit she would do was like
chaos.
Revenge porn.
Oh no.
Yeah.
Okay.
Like she was not
girl,
well. Not,
don't feel that girl.
Yeah. Like one time she like snuck into her ex's apartment after he broke up with her. Shut up. Like, why would you do that? He broke up with you. And he was like, why are you here? And so it's like she was just not well, but I feel like I felt sorry for her. So I kept her as a friend because I was just like, I know you're toxic and I know you are problematic, but I feel bad for you and I feel like you need a friend. And it was a very like one-sided friendship because she always came to me with like her drama. And she ended up creating like a Finsta account and like cyberbullying me and like
cyberbullying you? But yeah. For what reason? Like what was
just
she saying?
Because. I don't know. It was not just, it was like a few girls that went to college with her and she was just like texting us like nasty things. And like anytime I would post something, she'd be like, who cares? Shut the fuck up. Nobody cares. Like you're a nerd. And I was like, yeah. And I was like, who is you're this troll? So one day I was like, I'm fed up with this fucking troll. So I took a screenshot of the handle and I posted it on my stories. And I said, like, does anybody know this troll or whatever? And two of my friends that went to college with me were like, we think it's this girl. And I was like, what?
This is real drama.
Yeah. So we did a whole like
investigative
yeah. reporting. And we realized there was this girl. And what it taught me about myself was, I think when I was younger, I gave a pass, or I was more accepting of toxic people in my life. Cause I just thought like some people have issues. So
right.
Everybody,
of course.
No one's perfect.
Yeah, yeah. I always used to have this line where I'm like, I can see something good in anyone. And then I got to this stage, especially when I turned 30, I was like, I don't have to see something good in everyone. And also like, not that everyone has something good, but it's not my responsibility to hold space for everyone's psycho behaviors because they have a good gold nugget in them. Like that's, I'm not Mother Teresa. Like my goal on earth is not to, I don't know.
I think I
just
have less patience for things that don't align
also
with
less
me.
Energy. I mean, I think like energy is just we have so little energy to spend. And it's just, I can't spend it on people who, you know what? Like I can also I can have a crazy friend who cares and is like open and vulnerable and working on themselves. But this is where it comes back to values. Like I can't have a crazy friend who's not self-reflective, not working on themselves and doesn't care about me. A selfish, crazy friend, not interested in self-development. That to me is like, no, thank you anymore. But it made up my entire 20s. Like,
this was her personality. This wasn't, she was going through something. It was like, this is who she was.
Like to the core. Yeah.
Yeah. So
I think like, honestly, to wrap things, my take on this all is that I think friendship breakups, it's a strong word, are a natural part of life. And I also think that as we get older, I'm trying to see them as less dramatic and more of a natural kind of like shedding of things that don't work for me anymore. And also like other people can shed me as something that doesn't work for them. And that I would love to get to this place where I can have the friendships you're talking about, where we have like real confrontation and someone can say, hey, Gabby, like that girl did to me, like you never reach out to me. You know, I would love friends who say that to me and help me be a better person and hold space for that.
Yeah. I think it's the important thing to remember too, is like if someone brings up confronts you about something, and I know it's easier said than done, but try not to take it as a personal attack.
Right, and look at it defensive. As like,
look at it as like, this person is bringing this up to my attention because they want to work on
They want to work on it, because otherwise they would ghost you and they would just completely
pull
away.
But I know it's like, it's really hard to receive because your natural instinct is to be like, defend yourself.
Yep.
So I think it's hard. I think the older you get, the more accepting you are of certain things happening and the more open you are to criticism.
And I think the more open, I think in relationships too, in really romantic relationships, the more open you are to being like, not everything is just easy and clicks. The things that we want in life take communication, openness, like they take vulnerability, they take calling things out and constructively working towards them. I think now that I see romantic relationships that way, I'm also starting to see friendships.
I think
that
it's also like the Instagram social media era doesn't help because people only post like my girls, and it's like, oh my god, how does she have so many friends? What you don't know is behind the scenes they all talk shit about each
other. I also get this a lot, everyone comments are like, it seems like you have such an amazing social life to me, and I do have an amazing social life, but I'm also still figuring out what I need from my social life. I'm like, my social media clearly does not show that.
That's what I'm saying. I think two things can be true. You can have a million friends, and you can also, I mean, look at me.
Still be figuring it out. Yeah.
Twice by two friends. We're not dumped. Ghosted, even worse.
I know. Well, this is interesting. So it turns out everyone's been through this shit, and you guys shouldn't feel
shame
about
it. No one's perfect. And no one's meant to be friends with everyone. That's the other thing. So,
oh my God. Biggest life learning for being a woman in the world. Take a deep breath.
And do yoga or something.
Okay, time for our next segment. How do you not know this?
This is our segment where we bring something about culture that's happening in culture, and we educate the other on it because
and shame them a little
bit. Your cultural blind spot.
Amen. What do you got for me?
Mine is really random, but kind of not random because I'm rewatching Southern Charm. Have you ever watched Southern Charm?
Is that the one that Craig
is in?
Okay, yeah. That's all I know about it.
So I started rewatching it because I just needed something in the background while I worked. And I forgot how batshit crazy the show was. So
is it all men or is it women too?
Okay, so that's the thing. So it was supposed to be based around like these like Southern gentlemen that have money and good looks or whatever. But in the first season, there was this red-haired girl, like young hot girl who kind of stole the show. So, but it's crazy. It's kind of like a soap opera, but like reality TV. So it was based on these, I guess, three guys, which is weird because so these three guys are all, so Thomas Ravenel, he was like 50 when he started the show.
Really?
Like literally 50.
Or he started the show?
No, he was both. Like the star of the show.
He's the star of the show. Okay.
And he was a disgraced treasurer of South Carolina and disgraced because he got caught buying cocaine and went to jail for it. But he comes from like a very prominent family in South Carolina.
Okay.
And so his last name, Ravenel, is like a big deal down there. Anyway, so this is one of the main stars. Then you have Whitney.
Not off to a great start.
No. Then you have Whitney, who is also like 45. And he's a producer of the show also. But he's like a film director.
I don't know guys from, like, could be really, Whitney.
I guess he can. Okay. He comes from like an old cool family with like a lot of money. His mom basically
sounds like
married.
There's a common theme here.
Yeah. So his mom is also on the show. And she, I guess, married two men that had a lot of money. And they both died or she divorced one of them. I don't know. But they have a shit ton of money. And Whitney, they both have like Peter Pan syndrome. Like 50 and 45, single. Like,
have they always been single?
Yeah.
They were never like married.
No. Single.
Okay.
And then you have Shep. Uh-huh. Shep is like...
I already hate him based on the name.
So Shep is also comes from like a well-to-do family in the South.
Is anyone poor?
Yes. Craig really? Is poor. Well, okay. Craig is not poor. He's like middle class. But compared to them, he's poor. And so Shep is 33 or something. Okay. So, but again, same pattern. Come with like a... Like they come from a good family. None of them really work. Or maybe they do, but I don't know what they do. Ton of money, no responsibilities, love to party, they all go out every night, hook up with 20-year-olds kind of vibe. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And then you have Craig, who's actually like the most relatable character. He just finished college, so he's like in his, I don't know, mid-20s or something like that.
He's that young when the show starts?
Yeah, he's super young. He's 36 now, or now? 37 okay. now. Okay. And the show has been on for like 10 years.
The show's been on for 10 years?
Yeah, it started in 2014, I think, or 2015. Wild.
And they can't even do a reality show in Paris that lasts more than
I know.
No one here is interesting enough.
Okay, well, so it's kind of centered around, like, the good old boys kind of bullshit. So Craig is, like, the quote-unquote poor one. He just finished college. He just finished law school. He's going to apply to a bar. So that's, like, the bar. So he's, like, that's his vibe. But he's kind of, like, the poor one compared to the other ones. And the whole theme is, like, they're, like, Peter Pan kind of guys. They don't want to grow up. They, like... go out, hook up with 20-year-olds. They don't want to settle down. They don't want to have kids. Like, the whole vibe. This man, Thomas Ravenel, hooks up with a 21-year-old.
He's 50?
Her name is Catherine Dennis. He's 50. Gets her pregnant. At the end of the season. They obviously have, like, a tumultuous relationship because he's 50 and she's 21 or 22.
Girl, what are you doing?
She gets pregnant, has a baby. And then I think... she is like in love with him, but I also think it's like the power dynamics because he comes from like a good family and he's like, I'm gonna run for Senate again, or he was gonna run for Senate, so she was like dressing older to fit like this like senator.
Such an
wife.
Urge to Google everyone as you're talking about
and
this.
And they had a very tumultuous relationship. End of the first season, you realize she gets pregnant, she has the baby. The second season is all about her trying to fit it into this whole campaign world of like this.
So he does end up running.
Yeah. He runs.
Even though he's disgraced.
He's disgraced. He runs. He's the joke of the elections. He gets like 3% votes or something like that. And they break up. They make up, break up, make up. Anyway, she gets pregnant at the end of the second season again with a second child.
I'm like looking at photos of all of them. Okay. All right.
Yeah, he's not even, honestly, he's not even that cute.
I usually like a guy with ears that stick out, but I'm not into him. That used
also,
to be my kink.
I'm sorry. He's dumb as rocks.
He's not giving intelligent. You
also,
know what?
He's like
unfortunately,
a terrible
a little
person. Later
to.
Down the road, he was accused of raping the nanny. Like, yeah, he's like a monster. That's why I don't mind calling him dumb and all the names in the book. He's like a truly, like, the worst human ever. He's also, like, low-key racist. And I say low-key because it's like,
I'm looking at his recent tweets and they're chaos.
No, he's crazy. Also, like, I'm pretty sure he still does cocaine on a regular basis because he goes into rages, like coke rages all the time on the show.
Why would you have a child with this guy? His most recent tweet is like so Trump support, so Trump.
Oh, yeah. He's problematic as fuck. There was a scene that they shot, like him with his dad, and the dad makes a comment about not liking a tipping the guy with a $5 bill because he hates that fellow Abraham Lincoln. And I'm like, and they
Lordy.
Also have a plantation, of course. And they love going to different plantations. And I'm like, I don't think we should be talking
what?
About
yeah,
did
you
really
see
weird.
He has a series called Wonderful Words of Wisdom?
He
that's 100%.
Oh my god, he also
need.
Quotes regularly, actually, that guy from Pride and Prejudice that you love.
What?
Yeah.
Mr. Darcy?
Yeah, he does.
Actually, I'll be you know what? I'm going to say something controversial. If you go back and watch / read Pride and Prejudice, Mr. Darcy,
well,
not the greatest.
Well, he quotes him at one point. I forgot why. But anyway.
Not the greatest.
This show is just truly insane. The first, I would say, 4 seasons is very centered on the men. The men are all a disaster. They cannot commit. Anytime they're confronted, they're like, it's not my fault, until season 5. That's where all the girls band together and they're like, fuck you, fuck you. And it's great. I love the girl power on season 5.
I'll watch it. I'll maybe watch it at your apartment or something.
Yeah, but yeah. It's really interesting to watch it because I forgot all these different things. Anyway, to wrap it up, I think the reason people love Craig and the Craig versus Paige.
I think it's
because
they love. Oh, well.
Well, he's actually the least problematic.
Also, she's like a strong woman. So I think it gave him like validation that he wasn't a piece of shit because she like says her mind and like.
And he's been the same since season one, but compared to the other monsters, he's not that bad.
Mm-hmm. Aye, aye. Well, mine. What is mine? Oh, yeah. I just like need a moment of credit that I feel like every person I think is funny on TikTok is then cast on SNL. And I, you know, Jane Wickline, do you follow her?
No,
I like follow her forever.
If I see her face, I'm better with faces.
She's really
names.
Awkward.
Okay.
So basically I use TikTok for two things, basically music and comedy. And I want credit for being, I would be an amazing casting agent, but I feel like we're in this era where, I don't know if you saw like Benny Drama has a show coming out and the other show that just came out, English Teacher.
Yes.
So like Brian Jordan Alvarez. So there are these two shows that have come out from TikTok stars or like social media stars. Yeah. And so we're in this era where that's translating to network TV.
Yeah,
it's translating
to big dollar.
Yeah, it's how you get discovered. It's how you get to write a script. And so many people that I followed on Instagram, like I followed the Chloe girl who's an SNL now on TikTok and Instagram first, mm-hmm. and then Jane Wickline. And I feel like it's such an interesting pipeline because we didn't used to be able to see the trajectory of their comedy career because they were part of
improv
groups.
Unless you're going to like comedy shows.
No, you would have to go to like Second City or like see these like, what are those, Groundlings, the one in LA. And I think it's so cool to watch their trajectory and how they kind of define their niche. And there's this girl that I followed, her name's Holmes, on TikTok. And then now they're cast on Benny Drama's new show. And I have a theory. I don't know if anyone follows Avery McClure. I'll link to him. Avery's a guy. Avery, I repost him on Instagram like all the time. And I just want to put it out there that he's the next person who's going to be like big. And I want credit for it when it happens. So that's like my personal take. We'll link to him in the show notes. I think he's the funniest person on TikTok. And so he's either going to be SNL or he's going to be like cast in a TV show and I can sense it. So.
I think I've seen his videos. Yeah, he's funny.
I repost him a lot. I love him. And so anyway, I just think it's crazy. I think we're in such an interesting era where we can... Same with music. Like, we can start to identify people really early in their career trajectories. I would love to be someone who works at a record label or who worked at, like, casting Netflix TV shows. I think I'd find the best people from TikTok. I think it's so cool that we get to watch their careers from start to finish.
I agree.
You know, or not finish. Hopefully not
finish.
Do you
think there's any Parisian TikTokers that can be successful?
I'm trying to think of anyone who's, like, extra funny.
I'm just like, if they're going to cast for this reality show in Paris.
I know.
They
need to find
you.
Someone. No, but I think when they cast for reality, to me, reality shows are so different from like SNL.
True, it's a very different kind of.
To me, reality shows are kind of like ill-intentioned chaos a lot of the times.
You either need like someone who's delusional, or you need someone who's just like chaotic.
Yeah,
and then maybe like
that's different than these people who are like funny, clever.
Yeah, that's true. I actually like that girl, Delaney something, the one that writes all these.
Delaney Rowe?
Yes. Yeah. I love her.
Yeah, but she like, I don't know why if she's not already writing, she should be writing Netflix shows. But
I don't know if she
is. There's so much talent.
She's gonna turn into a fashion girl. She's like always here in Fashion Week. But I love her.
She does food stuff too. But I just think it's so cool that we have this opportunity to witness talent
in
its early stages. I love it and I'm obsessed with it. And I kind of treat social media as if I'm looking for the next big thing.
You almost feel like it's like your friend who made it.
Oh yeah, and I feel like I can claim some credit, which obviously makes literally no sense, but
I love it. It's time for our next segment.
Snack and spiral, spiral and snack. Okay, so today I am snacking on, I know this sounds boring, but I'm snacking on bread. And for me, bread is I think it's life. I don't know how I don't think there's any other way to say it. My hobbies here are bread and cheese. I love it so much. And I've learned so much about bread since I've moved here.
Yeah.
I don't know if you guys know, but there's a baguette called Une Tradition. It's basically like a traditional baguette. And I am obsessed with it. And I get it all the time. It's a Euro 20 or a Euro 30. And it is more, they're only allowed to use four ingredients in it. It's just, if you get a Tradition warm.
Oh, the best.
From the boulangerie. I just think it's one of the best things in the entire world. Have you had the Utopia one?
No.
I haven't had it. I won Best Baguette in Paris.
Oh, yeah. I love how they have like that contest every year.
My favorite, people ask me all the time. No, they don't. Just kidding. But I ask myself all the time, what's my favorite baguette? My favorite Tradition is at Maison d'Isabelle, and it's in the...
I need to go to that place. Can we do a field trip there?
Yes.
Apparently, it's so crazy, they have the best croissants,
you know, too. I know. And you know, it was in my neighborhood, and I discovered it on accident, and I was like, oh,
can
my God.
Can we do like a croissant like crawl.
So I want to do a croissant crawl and I want to do a Chinese. I want to do a bread crawl. Or we get a million of the same type of baguette.
A bakery not far from here that won best baguette like in 2017. But ooh. I mean.
No, but I think we should do that. Who knows? I think we should do like maybe like best year baguettes of every year. But it's crazy. They can all taste so different.
Yeah.
They can have such different flavors, such different textures. And yeah, if you look at our Instagram, we'll do a post where I do the difference between a tradition, a kind of like a basic baguette. And then mm-hmm. I'll do a sourdough, like French sourdough. It's called pain au levain. And you can sort of see the difference between the three and how they look. And obviously you can't taste them. But yeah, so I just am obsessed with bread. I think it's one of the things that, I don't know. It brings
what's your favorite?
So much happiness.
Tradition?
I think a warm tradition, but I'm going to be honest. I also love like a, like that one we have had a levain today. I love a thick cut slice. That's kind of grainy. Mm-hmm. That with like a salted butter, like you were saying,
yeah, it's so
just,
good.
But a warm tradition that just comes from the boulangerie. There's really kind of nothing like it. Yeah.
Yeah.
I'm obsessed.
Agreed.
In terms of spiral.
What are you spiraling about?
This has been spiraling nonsense. Quite frankly, I started working in PR, and ever since then, I've tried to reconcile not being so angry about it, and I'm angry about it all the time. And now I feel like being angry about it is part of the cultural zeitgeist, so it's kind of aligning, and it's people canceling.
Okay.
When I was in New York, so I work in PR, mm-hmm. I used to work in restaurant PR, which meant that I would have to make these reservations for journalists, like sometimes days or weeks in advance. Right. And what people didn't understand, the journalists who were coming, sorry, you were maybe one of the journalists
I
coming.
Would never cancel on free food, so that was not me.
Smart. We would have to call the restaurant. We would have to send them a prep document explaining who the journalist was. We would have to walk them through dietary preferences, what mm-hmm. they could order, prep the staff. They would have to prep the whole staff. It was kind of complicated, right? It's a busy service, so they have to understand that we'd have to prep the journalist because you still had to tip. So we always would say you don't have to pay for the meal, but you have to tip because otherwise the staff doesn't make a tip. We would go, that would take what, an hour and a half of a very busy workday, and people would cancel last minute like all the time. And I remember at the time trying to kind of prevent it by explaining people up front, like I would very subtly say, okay, the staff has been prepped, they're waiting for you to come, you have a table. Sometimes it'd be tables for three, for four. So I think that's when it started.
Yeah.
And then as I get older, I really feel like when people cancel last minute, by the way, I'm talking about last minute canceling, mm-hmm. they really are kind of showing you that they think their time is more valuable than your time. And I know I take it probably too seriously, but really drives me crazy. And now I realize it's a big part of the friendship conversation. It's a huge conversation is oftentimes like, what do we owe our friends? And like, I think when it's like a group thing and like no one really cares, that's fine. But when it's a thing like you've planned your lunch or like you've planned half your day to spend with someone or you've made a dinner reservation that you can't get a refund on with a credit card or like situations that I don't know, like you really set aside your time. We're all so busy. If someone like cancels the same day, and I'm not saying you can't make exceptions because I hear everyone saying already can't be like crazy about it. But
no, but when it's a pattern, it's annoying.
When it's a pattern, it happens like all the time and it happens in a way where it disrupts your schedule.
Yeah.
Like I'm not talking about something where it's like five of us are going to lunch. Like I'm not going to come last minute. Like no one really cares.
Yeah.
But if it's a one-on-one thing and you like prep for it and you block time, like for me, if I block time for a lunch, I have to like rearrange my day.
Yeah.
So
I live by my calendar. So if you're on my calendar and you cancel last minute, it's like you're fucking up my entire week because I could have done something else.
Yes. And like that time, I always want to explain to people, like, you know, that time I took for you, I had to not spend time with someone else that I wanted to spend time with. I don't know. I realize I'm intense about it, but I think as I get older, it's just one of those things where I'm like, again, not if someone does it to me once, but for me, like the third time it happens, I'm always like, okay, I kind of know now that you're a canceller and I'll invest a little bit less.
I have some friends that I know to be flaky. And so when we make plans, I'm always like, well, I have plans, who knows?
There,
But yeah, I think I couldn't be like really close friends with someone who's flaky all the time. The other thing, if you cancel on me, then it's your responsibility to reschedule.
Wait. Okay. Same with dating, by the way. I'm so sick of my friends being like, he canceled. Like, should I follow up and ask when we're hanging out? No, don't do it. If he canceled, he follows up and makes the other plan.
I think,
and same with friendship, and I agree with that.
If you cancel on me, you have to apologize for canceling, and then you have to be like,
you have to bow down, you have to get on your knees, you have to start being
No, but you have to, I think the proper etiquette, according to me, is you apologize for canceling, and then you say, how about next Wednesday?
I agree.
But
because otherwise, yeah, to me, I'm taking that as a cue that you didn't want to hang out in the first place.
Yeah, me too. And we're like, okay, well, go fuck yourself then. You know.
Okay, same. What are you snacking on?
So I wanted to bring a snack that was like tying into the breakup theme. So I brought like one of my favorite comfort foods, which is our cookies.
Yeah, I didn't know this about you until probably today, but you're a cookie girl.
I am a big cookie monster.
Do you think the world is split into like cookie girls and like what would be the other kind of girl? Ice cream? I feel like there's cookie girls, ice cream girls, and like cake's not good.
Like brownies? I don't know.
What's like another category? Maybe like elevated desserts, like pastry
girls. I'm not a big like fruity dessert girl. Like I'm not a big fruit tart girl.
I have always, my middle sister growing up, always like much more thin than me, much cooler than me, has always been a fruit dessert girl. And I've always been like, I wish I could be a fruit dessert girl. I am a peanut butter fudge crumbled on top of like I'm just like a chaos dessert.
I feel like chocolate is my number one. Like cookies is like a close second.
What is your favorite cookie?
I like a classic, like chocolate chip.
Chocolate chip.
Yeah. Like, I mean, honestly, I like every cookie, but chocolate chip, it's like my comfort, like the classic.
Mm-hmm. What about texture?
So I kind of like, I normally like the ones that are like gooier, like chewy and on the inside normally, but I just like a good warm cookie. Mm. Actually, the best cookie I've had in Paris, I had it a few weeks ago at a pizza restaurant called Ubets. And they have as the dessert the cookie.
Yeah.
Which I was like, any place that has cookie as dessert.
How do they pronounce it, Danny?
Cookie. And it was like served warm with like ice cream on top. Like perfect. And it was like kind of raw in the middle.
Was the ice cream unique too? Didn't you tell me?
No.
That?
So like the cheesecake one that came,
ice cream or something?
Yeah, they had cheesecake. But I got that on the side.
Oh, okay. Okay. Nice. As one should.
And then there's two. Well, I'm actually working on a cookie guide for my Substack, but I really like in my neighborhood, obviously because I'm lazy to leave, but I really, so Paris is becoming a cookie town, but they're not.
Paris
really
is having the renaissance that the US had with cupcakes, but they're having it with cookies.
The cookie. And they like, I went somewhere in, I think it was in Antwerp in Belgium. They had like a store called American Cookie.
Really?
Was, like, oh,
was it good?
I didn't go, but it was just like, it was interesting that was the branding. But anyway, in Paris, now it's becoming a thing. Mm-hmm. So there are some good options. My favorite one in my neighborhood, I really like this one called Puffy. Mm. And they're like very similar to the Levain cookies in New York. So like the really thick ones that are like very kind of raw and chewy in the middle. And
those are my favorite.
They're almost like tall. That's how fat they are.
I want them to be chubby, but I want the chubby part to be gooey. Raw. Yes. Yeah.
And then I really like this boulangerie on Rue de Martyrs called Le Pain Retrouvé, which is like when you walk in, it looks like very bare bones, like hipster, like concrete walls kind of vibe. And they have, honestly, everything they have is really good. All their food is delicious. But me and Paul, I don't know how we discovered it, but one time we got a cookie there, which is not like when you go in there, that wouldn't be the first thing
you think of.
No, because they have a lot of different kinds of bread. So you would, I guess, maybe gravitate towards something.
Well, I'd gravitate toward bread. You'd gravitate towards cookie.
But I think it was almost like by mistake, me and Paul got a cookie there one time. And now it's like our cookie place. I love that one. It's a little crunchier on the outside, but still kind of soft.
We tried it before this recording. I thought it was really good. It was like, it felt like very natural in a way that was appetizing, like not too sugary.
Yeah. And so I like those a lot. And
what are your thoughts on cookie dough? Like raw cookie dough.
Yeah, I love it. Yeah, I love it. So those are my favorite ones. Those are the ones I brought to the for snacking. It also kind of a callback to my New York days and the comfort eating food through a breakup. When I was going through a breakup in New York, I was seamlessing, which is basically seamless. It's like Uber Eats in New York. And I was getting this, there's a place in New York called the Insomnia Cookies. Mm-hmm. And they basically were open until like 4 a.m. and you can like Uber Eats cookies at 3 a.m. And that's what I was doing.
Why did I never do that? I live near one in the East Village.
They weren't the best cookies, but they were like decent enough.
They were there.
Yeah, they were fine. And I think they had like the M&M cookies, which I love.
You know what I used to do in New York? I would get those blocks of Nestle Toll House cookie dough.
The best.
It would be like this giant square, and then it would be broken into little squares within it. And I would just sit. You know, my New York setup was a bunk bed and then a chair under a bunk bed until I was 30 years old. And I would sit under my bunk bed and I would eat the raw cookie dough square by square. I always like look back at photos of my face. I'm like, why was my face a circle? Like a full circle? I'm like, because I was like living off of like the nacho dip from just, I was living off of Tostitos nacho dip with Tostito lime chips and Nestle Toll House cookie same. Dough. I was like, so same.
What basically. Did I gain? 10 pounds in one summer. Yeah, oh because God. I was eating fucking cookies at 3 a.m. every day.
But there was nothing better.
Listen, it healed me from my breakup. Yeah. So it served its purpose. But yeah, so that's what I brought for the snacking part. And you'll see a video about it later. And then for my spiral.
Yeah, and what's good? What's making you crazy?
I don't want to make things political because we're over it. And we're all going through it. And there's... Every time I
we're
open
not
my phone,
over it. Well, we're... Yeah, we're going through it.
It's an oversaturated
we're
space.
We're learning how to moderate our news intake.
Yeah, yes. We're like, okay, what the fuck is going to happen next? Yeah. But okay, yeah. My beef right now, and I know this is like counterproductive, but is with the Democratic Party and their lack of organization to protest mm-hmm. properly.
Oh, we're going to get into a political. We're going to become a political podcast real quickly.
Welcome
on this
to
one.
NPR. Yeah. Anyway.
Terry Gross.
I'm just going to... take the angle of protesting specifically because we live in France and right. they protest for everything.
But you
here.
Made a comment to me when you were like, if what was happening in the US was happening in France, they would have burned
the city
to the ground. Yeah.
Like, okay, I don't, and this is a thing also. Like, I think the media portrays what happens in France, specifically in Paris, when there's protests as like the city is in shambles. And that's not the case. People mm-hmm. still go to work. People still like live their lives.
I did one time had to walk through fire to get to the bar I was going to because they decided to burn trash through the entire street yes. and I had to cross the line of fire.
People were still at the bar.
Oh, no, but we got cocktails on the terrace. It was chill, but definitely like
I remember
didn't
one
smell
time
good.
There was some sort of protest about something like gnarly. Someone died or something. I can't remember. And a girl was going to come stay in my apartment. I was like going out of town and she's like, I had to cancel my trip because of the protests.
Oh, no.
And I was like, girl, this is like
no, it does
a Monday
really,
here.
It gets really blown up on the news.
Yeah.
It's also always like very much relegated to very specific areas of Paris, which is oftentimes very public, you know, like it's not in the fifth.
A lot of
the
times. Yeah. Okay. It can get bad, but mm-hmm. no one, they don't like hurt bystanders.
Well, no, but this is what, so I was funny, Danny, because I was talking about this with someone today and I was like, it's so tough because in the US, I just think we're at a point where like, people wouldn't feel safe to protest. I think people would be worried. They'd be
that's
like,
true. Yeah. I will say
it sucks.
But I do think the Democratic Party is not, they don't have good leadership because they can't even band together for like a strategic protest. Like, mm-hmm. I'm not telling you have to burn shit to the ground. I understand that might be too extreme for Americans. But the fact that you show up to like whatever speech you gave, I don't even know what it was, wearing pink and that was your protest, I'm like, are you okay? Or like with a little paddle board that says, this is not normal. Yeah, no shit, Karen. What the fuck? So to me, I'm not saying we don't have to be extremists, though I think we do because we're an extreme situation. But I do think the French should teach a masterclass on how to protest mm-hmm. because I don't know if you remember I'm sure you do, the trash protest that they did.
You so kidding me? They lit it on fire outside of my apartment.
Oh, they lit it on fire? My neighborhood was
my building
a little more
like
demure.
Burnt garbage for almost a year after that.
Holy shit. Well, I will say I was a little on the side of the protesters. Actually, fully on
no,
them.
I think all of us were on the side of the protesters.
Right.
It was very difficult to live in but to be
fair,
it was just
like
living in
shitty,
the East Village.
But they were very smart about it. So there was a protest. They were raising the retirement age. And people that work in like garbage collection were like, our job is too physical. You can't mm-hmm. raise the age. Like, we're not like physically, we can't do this for another 5 years. Mm-hmm. And instead of being like, we're going to wear pink to work, they were like, all right, you want to do this shit? We're not okay with it. So we're protesting by not picking up the trash. Mm-hmm. And Paris looked like New York.
Yeah.
It was just like garbage.
It was weeks.
Everywhere.
It was like almost like it was over 3 weeks.
Yeah.
I think.
Anyway, to me, the big issue to bring it back to like my spiral is like they, and I say they because I don't live there anymore, so I can't really go out there and protest with them. But I think they, the Democrats, need to figure out a effective way, strategic way to protest or to do something that hurts Republicans mm-hmm. for real. And that isn't like, we're going to wear a tie that's purple today. Like, how the fuck is that going to hurt?
I know,
any of them?
But I wish I did know what the solution was. No, I cannot wait to get comments on this podcast that are like, stay in your lane.
No.
Okay, Democrats, figure it out or we're going to face a friendship breakup.
Come take a class from the French.
Yes.
Be like, hey, can you give us a masterclass? I'm sure it could be arranged.
Ooh, maybe that exists. If anyone knows of a masterclass in protesting,
if anyone has a contact within the Democrats,
I'd love to take a masterclass in protesting, like what kind of protests work. But
yeah, a history on like protesting could be really interesting.
Yeah.
Anyway, come to France on a Saturday and just chill at Place de la République and you'll find
you'll see how it's
some
done.
Things.
Cool. Well, guys, thanks for joining us.
Yeah. So many.
We ended on a heated note. We went from cookies
to protesting
to the end of society.
Oh God.
But thanks for coming. Also send us your
by the French.
Yeah.
I'm like, burn it down.
I know I've watched you become radicalized in the course of this podcast. But yeah, thanks for joining us and DM us your breakup stories. And we hope this helps alleviate a little bit of the shame that comes with.
If not you, well, maybe it is. Who knows?
It could be you, but if it is you, maybe okay. Try to learn from it like I did so that I'm not like a flaky bitch anymore. True. And now I blame people for canceling on me versus canceling on other people.
All right, till next time.
Bye.
This was Clashes,
a podcast brought to you by two idiots.
Clearly. I don't know if I can laugh on cue.